From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, harbingers of things to come with L.A. Marzulli. Get ready for that. But here's what's happening. Well, shrimpers returned to Louisiana waters on Monday for the first commercial fishing season since the Gulf of Mexico oil disaster. Very uncertain what the crude may still be doing and what's going on in the water and what price they'll have to catch for the consumers, worrying about possible lingering effects from the massive BP spill. The spill has put a crimp in the fishing industry in a state that ranks first in the nation in producing shrimp, blue crab, crawfish, and oysters, a $318 million a year business in Louisiana. In a moment, Captain Kelly Sweeney joins us for the hour and we'll take your phone calls about this situation. Home builder confidence dropped for the third straight month in August as the struggling economy and a flood of cheap foreclosed properties kept people from buying new homes. Japan lost its place as the world's number two economy to China in the second quarter as receding global growth sapped momentum and stunted a shaky recovery. The figures underscore China's emergence as an economic power that is changing everything from the global balance of military and financial power to how cars are designed. It is already the biggest exporter, auto buyer, and steel producer, and its global influence continues to expand. Well, like the summer heat, fear of America's impending decline is weighing on Washington these days as the United States lost its oomph as a superpower. Even President Obama isn't immune from the gloom. Americans won't settle for number two, the president shouted at one political rally in early August. How about number 11? That's where the U.S. ranks in Newsweek's list of the 100 best countries in the world. Not even in the top 10. And as the worst recession since the 1930s festers on, along with the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, no number of legislative triumphs, financial reform, health care seem capable of lifting the nation right now out of its doldrums. Ms. Shedlock is with us, registered investment advisor. Ms., sounds like we got a lot on our hands these days, doesn't it?
Oh, we do have a lot on our hands. And I'm telling you, the worst thing here, we talked about it, though, we expected it, is the unemployment claims. 482,000 last week. We're going to be back above 500, possibly 500,000 jobs a week we're losing in new unemployment claims. The four-week moving average, 473,000. It had dropped under 450 for a couple of months. We're going the wrong way, George. We're going the wrong way.
Finland, number one country to live in. Switzerland, two. Sweden, three. What do they know that we don't?
Well, they're smaller economies. They've got a social fabric, I think, that's a lot better than ours. I mean, just look at the dichotomy we have here. What CEOs are making, what public union workers are making, their pension plans versus the have-nots. We've got a shrinking middle class. Some of those places have at least a stable group of middle class. We don't have that anymore. I also see Japan is heading back into a recession. Their GDP was 0.4%, so they're slipping back in. And look how they ratcheted down U.S. GDP. A couple months ago, they were saying that we were going to come in at 3.8. Then they lowered that to 3.6. And then the final estimate was 2.6. Well, now they said, oops, we made a mistake. Our final was wrong. What happened is imports rose more, and since gross domestic product stands for domestic product, imports rise. That reduces our GDP. Now we're looking at a potential 1%. George, we're going to be back at zero or by the fourth quarter, I think.
All right, Mitch, what's new on the blog?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm just trying to keep up with all the economic activity, and I'm writing about the end right now, so someone will check it out. I'm doing a post right now. Just tune in. Do a Google search for Mish.
You got it. Thanks a lot. A new study, by the way, says that men who earn significantly less than their female partners or who earn nothing are far more likely to cheat than those in relationships where incomes are more or less equal. In fact, men who are completely dependent on their partner's income were five times more likely to cheat than men who contributed an equal amount of money to the relationship. This, according to research presented at the annual meeting of the American Sociological Association. The Taliban stoned to death a man and a woman in northern Afghanistan for allegedly having an affair. The stoning took place on Sunday in a village dominated by the Taliban. Federal health regulators are pushing to withdraw a low blood pressure drug that has been on the market for 14 years in spite of the manufacturer's failure to submit evidence that it actually helps patients. The FDA-approved Shire Laboratories drug proametine in 1996 based on promising early results in treating low blood pressure, but the company has never conducted a mandatory follow-up study to actually prove the long-term benefits of the drug. And actress Zsa Zsa Gabor has received her last rites from a priest in a Los Angeles hospital following surgery to remove two blood clots. Zsa Zsa Gabor has seen a priest and is not doing very well, in serious condition, according to her publicist. The 93-year-old actress was readmitted to UCLA Ronald Reagan Medical Center after her release following hip surgery. And a British archivist believes that he has uncovered the real-life inspiration for the French novelist Victor Hugo's mysterious character, Quasimodo, the deformed bell ringer of the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. Andrew Glue, who works on the Tate Collection's archives in London, was studying the seven-volume handwritten autobiography of the 19th-century British sculptor Henry Simpson when he came across a reference to a Frenchman whose nickname was Hunchback. Simpson had been employed in the 1890s to carve stone as part of the renovation of Notre Dame in Paris, which has suffered damage during the French Revolution in the 1790s. Up next, Captain Kelly Sweeney with the full hour with us as we talk now about the stopped oil spill. But what does this mean to Louisiana? What does this mean to fishing? And what does this mean to you? The captain's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Since the beginning of this oil leak more than 100 days ago, Captain Kelly Sweeney has been with us. He's a master mariner, and he's been really calling the shots, telling us what's been going on. He's been coming on a lot during our news clips. I thought it'd be a good time to spend an hour with Kelly. We'll take phone calls in just a moment as well, just to get an overall of what has happened, what's going to happen, and what's going on with fishing. Here's Captain Kelly Sweeney. Hey, Kelly, welcome.
Ahoy, George, to you and all the listeners. Thanks for having me on.
All right, how about an update, first of all, on the stopping of the oil leak? What's going on there?
Okay, well, right now, over the weekend, Admiral Allen issued a letter to British Petroleum and said that certain conditions had to be met before the bottom kill could be initiated. And that includes some pressure and integrity, well integrity tests. And right now, there's discussions with engineers and science teams on a concern about 42,000 gallons of trapped oil in the well that may be released when this bottom kill is conducted. And so BP has to come up with some answers about what they're going to do if that happens, clean up, dispersant, whatever. They're going to be working on that. And then once Admiral Allen is satisfied and the government is satisfied that they can conduct the bottom kill without making things worse, they're going to give it a go, and it could be as early as tomorrow. And then after the bottom kill process begins, it's going to take several days for them to get down to the depth, because they're going to have to go very slowly to get down to the depth that they need to get to intercept the original well. And then they send down an electrical charge down the relief well pipe to get an idea of how close they are, you know, to the original well. Right now they're about 4 feet away, and around 35, 40 feet thereabouts away from the intersection point.
Is this even necessary?
The relief well, Admiral Allen and the government and BP have all decided that the relief well is necessary, because the pressure tests that they conducted after the top kill showed that there was still a situation that required the bottom kill through the relief well to kill this well completely, to finish the job.
Now, the fishing, of course, the shrimpers starting their season, everybody's concerned. They're concerned about what the consumers may think. They're concerned about the possible lingering effects of the massive spill. What do you hear, Kelly? What do your sources tell you about that?
Well, there's no doubt about, George, that there's a great amount of concern down there. Whereas 22% of the Gulf is still closed by the government because of crude oil dispersant toxicity, and this opening off of Louisiana is not a, you know, a full opening as it was in the past. The FDA has come out and said that the seafood is not a problem, but then right after they made that announcement, they admitted that they weren't quite sure and they needed to do additional tests just to make sure, because you know, they didn't have the scientific data that they thought that they needed. So how it's going to affect the fishermen, unfortunately, I think that the ones that were not able to have their vessels become part of this vessel of opportunity cleanup, and many of them are now laid off, are not going to recoup the economic loss that they had because of the spill. There's no doubt about that.
Well, they say it's a $318 million a year business just in Louisiana. So why don't we force BP to take some of the billions that they're going to put in this kitty, and we're only talking $318 million, and say for 1 year we're not going to have any fishing down there. Give the shrimp and the fish and everything a chance to regenerate again, but come up with that check for the amount that they would have produced during that year and divvy it out among all the fishermen.
Well, George, that's a good idea. And, you know, but I think, you know, just before the commercial break, you said that you were, I was thinking about when you said about how this is going to affect the listeners. And one way is directly, I think, going to affect them. There is a $75 million liability cap for economic damages under the Oil Pollution Act of 1990. And then if it goes beyond, and in this case, of course, it's going to be far beyond that, then the oil company involved, the oil polluter, in this case, British Petroleum, it goes to a trust fund where that money has been set aside through various, it's around 8 cents barrel of oil, I believe it is, that it goes right into this trust fund that is there in case that happens. But BP could very likely claim that 70, and they have chosen thus far not to waive it, a $75 million economic damage liability cap, and then stick the U.S. taxpayers with the rest of it.
Right.
And that's why I've been so adamant about this H.R. 5629 that we've discussed on shows previously that is now going up for a vote in the House. And I hope the Coast listeners tag their representatives with this and tell them, hey, get on it. Because that would eliminate the $75 million liability cap, boost it up to $1.5 billion with a every three-year review, and eliminate this loophole. Because there's a very good possibility in my mind, because you're talking $318 million here, that's beyond the economic cap that they were already faced on the, under the OPA 90, Oil Pollution Act of 90.
Do you anticipate any criminal charges here?
No doubt about it in my mind. Our government is definitely investigating. As a matter of fact, I received word from one of my sources on the scene that in September, after the bottom kill is completed, which it could take probably around 2 more weeks if they start tomorrow, but whenever they start, when Admiral Allen gives the okay, around 2 weeks. After that, they're going to contract with, and they haven't determined yet, but there are negotiations going on, and the U.S. Navy is going to be involved as well in bringing back up the Deepwater Horizon oil rig from the bottom to use as evidence in the criminal investigation of this incident. So I definitely think there's going to be some criminal charges. A number of the top people, the head BP man on the rig the night this disaster began, killed 11 men, has refused to testify thus far in all the joint Coast Guard hearings down in Louisiana, and the fourth one's going to be coming up in Houston next week. He's refused to testify, taking the fifth. A number of the captain on board the rig and the head offshore installation manager, both Transocean employees, bailed out and refused to testify during the hearings last time. So it'll be interesting to see whether they're going to cop out this next time and not say anything and just hide behind their concern about their liability. it'll be interesting to see. But I definitely think that there's going to be criminal investigation, and I think there should be criminal charges. 11 men died. This is a terrible disaster that's going to wreak havoc economically on many people, including the fishermen, for years. There are people who in the tourism industry who've been affected. The people who live in the Gulf are going to have to live with this for a long time. I have good friends.
Well, you know, it's like stopping the bleeding, which apparently they've done, but the patient is still in critical condition.
Absolutely true, George, and the patient is definitely in critical condition. The dead zone in the Gulf, which happens every year because of the pesticide runoff, and it makes the water, it takes the oxygen out of the water, basically, and makes it a dead zone, is larger than it's been in years because of the Gulf spill. That's what scientists are checking out now. And there's a research vessel, one of a number that are going to be on the scene soon, but one has just finished a 10-day cruise on checking out the how the food chain is going to be affected by the oil spill and the use of dispersants. They're finishing up a 10-day cruise right now, and that's the first scientific data they're going to find on the beginning of how this is going to affect the entire food chain down in the Gulf.
If you were at a restaurant and you ordered shrimp cocktail and they delivered it to you and they said, oh, by the way, Captain Sweeney, yeah, we've heard you on Coast to Coast. You've done a great job. This shrimp, by the way, is from the Gulf. Would you eat it?
Well, you know, George, I don't think I would have ordered it. I don't think I would have ordered it.
You wouldn't have ordered it? Well, that's because I was sitting on a table behind you, and I ordered it for you and had it sent over there.
Oh, but you know what, George, what convinced me, you had your food safety expert on.
Jeff Nelk.
Two or three weeks ago, and he was talking about, you would ask him this question, and I was listening. I had just been on for an update, and he was talking about how they had a sniff test. And that if it passed the sniff test, then it would go on, and that was like one way they were checking. And I was thinking to myself, sniff test?
I know.
I mean, how bad is it going to have to be before you can smell the oil? I mean, that's bad. So I mean, I'm not a food safety expert, George, but I tell you, if it smells like oil, I don't want to eat it.
I really think this is cheap money. If BP would come up for a check for $318 million, at least for the fishermen in Louisiana. That's the amount of money they would lose in 1 year, according to these statistics I see. Give them a check for that. You know, let the state divvy it up, you know, based on their sales from last year and how much they all made. And, you know, let the fish regenerate. Because one thing that this planet does, Kelly, and you know that watching the high seas, it does come back. It does have a way of fighting. And, you know, I believe in the Gaia theory, which is this planet is alive. It's an organism, and I think it'll come back, but you got to let it rest.
That's true, and there's been many claims, George, that I've read about. There was one guy that a fisherman that had lost like $360,000 in income from his fishing operation, and ended up getting like $5,000. And there was a big concern some time ago, and this to me is something that is I can see why the fishermen were really uptight about it. They were paid by BP to clean up oil, and then when they made a claim for how much they'd lost in the fishing, the BP, the earnings that they had from cleaning up the oil were taken out of the money that they got as far as their claim. I mean, that was a big thing. I don't know for sure. I don't know enough about it to make a say either way on it. But, I mean, it seems to me that if somebody's getting paid to clean up oil, you know, that's one thing, and then the money that they lost fishing is another. So the fishermen have really suffered this year down in the Gulf, George, and they're not the only ones. There's a lot of people suffering down in the Gulf now.
Absolutely. You're keeping your eyes on what could be another big-time maritime hotspot, the Arctic. We'll talk about that in a moment, Kelly. Kelly's book, From the Bridge, Authentic Modern Sea Stories. You know, he was first with us when we were talking about piracy at the seas. His website, linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com, maritimeheadhunters.com. Kelly, how about we take some phone calls? You ready for that?
Sounds great, George. I'd love it.
We'll do that in a minute. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Simply fire away. We'll be back with Captain Kelly Sweeney and your phone call, something we haven't done with him in a long time. The lines are open. Okay, next hour, L.A. Marzulli joins us. Part of his work is called The Alien Interviews. Much more than that, he's going to talk about really the things out there, harbingers of things to come. what's happening globally and how is it affecting life and why is it the coming of the great deception? So that's coming up in just a moment. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls with Captain Kelly Sweeney right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Captain Kelly Sweeney. Kelly, we're going to take calls here, but tell me now this hot point here at the Arctic. What do you think is going on?
Well, George, in my opinion, the Arctic is the big hot spot coming up maritime-wise. And actually, the Coast Guard just issued a report, and it's called the Arctic, the Emerging Frontier. And there's so many things going on up there right now that are maritime-based but are going to impact all Americans because it's going to affect us unbelievably. The first thing is, of course, tying in with what's going on down the Gulf is oil drilling. Right now I have a friend on a ship conducting a survey for Shell Oil up in the Chukchi Sea in anticipation for billions of dollars of leases, oil leases up there for drilling. And there's a very large iceberg that's calved off of a glacier in Greenland that is slowly moving the shipping lanes between Canada and Greenland. And as I've worked with one of the premier scientists on an oceanographic ship, Craig Lee from the University of Washington, who's done lots of studying of the Arctic up there in that Greenland area, and they call it the switchyard, where it's a mix of fresh and salt water, and there's all kinds of changes going on. This is like the canary in the coal mine, this glacier calving off like this.
Right.
And as the ice melts, and a couple of years ago it was a record ice melt, as that occurred, and as the ice has been retreating, there has been an increased interest from maritime circles. Actually, one of my articles in Professional Mariner, I think it was a year and a half ago, talks about this. But there is probably 15 to 25% of the untapped reserves of oil up there. There's diamonds and gold at the bottom of the ocean. And there, as this opening of the Northwest Passage above Canada and the Northeast Passage above Russia, the shipping companies that run vessels through there can avoid going through the canals and save thousands of miles on the trip. And last year, Beluga Shipping, a German company, sent two ships through the Northern Passage above Russia back down through the Bering Strait, just north of Nome, Alaska, and down in the Pacific in a way to avoid having any canal tolls, not have to worry about any piracy, and it was successful. And so there's a lot going on up there, and there's no doubt about it, it's the emerging. And I know I'm talking a lot about it, but there's so much going on, George, it's unbelievable and overwhelming.
And how are the Russians handling things up there?
Well, you remember when the Russians put that flag under the North Pole, and there was a lot of news coverage about that. And some people made a joke of it. Well, the Russians didn't think it was a joke because they were making their claim, because there's part of the territorial claim that they're making up there is that they're saying that an underwater, basically continental shelf, extends from Russia through the North Pole, and that they basically have claimed almost half the Arctic Ocean and the water and land underneath there, the ocean bottom.
There'll be a showdown at the OK Corral on this one.
No, I think there's no question about it, George. As a matter of fact, Russia brought President Medvedev sent troops up to the Arctic in March, and he went on national television and said that we are prepared to defend our claims in the North. Prime Minister Harper up in Canada came out last year and said, we are going to defend our sovereignty in the North. And Canada is undergoing almost $7 billion program of Arctic military vessels, survey vessels, and defense vessels. And they are right now conducting oceanographic surveys to make sure that they know exactly where their territorial waters lie. The Russians want to start charging people to go through their waters up north. The Canadians want to start tracking vessels as they're going through their waters across. And all of this is looming on the horizon maritime-wise. It's a major thing going on up there
right now. All right. To the phones we go, east of the Rockies, Rochester, New York. Sam, get us started. You're up.
Hi, Sam.
Morning, gentlemen. I had a question.
Hi, Sam. How are you?
Great, sir. Great, Captain. I had a question for you. Do you think that the government will take preventative measures now, you know, just in case if there's ever a an accident like that ever again in either, you know, either coast or anything like that?
I think that, well, I think the first thing is that there's a lot of bills that have been proposed in Congress following this. There's having to do with the blowout preventer inspections. And one of the ones that I've been talking a lot about, as I mentioned, was H.R. 5629, which would, among other things, require that only U.S. flag drilling rigs be allowed to drill for our oil in our territorial waters. I don't see any reason why we should anymore allow foreign flag ships like the Deepwater Horizon, companies register in other places to avoid paying taxes into our country, to circumvent our more stringent laws. They should no longer be allowed to get around our laws by doing this. And so I certainly hope that this passes. But yeah, there's going to be a lot of changes. Business as usual is not going to be anymore. There's going to be big changes, and rightly so.
Let's go to Dallas, where we're number one on our favorite station there, KLIF. Hello, Cindy. Go ahead. Take it away.
Hi. Glad to talk to both of you.
Hi, Sydney. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. I find the show really interesting tonight because I'm a school teacher and we're back in school this week. But last week, another teacher, girlfriend, and I decided to see for ourselves what was going on. So we actually flew from Dallas to Pensacola and then drove on to Destin just to see what the situation was and talk to the people. And what was really interesting, the restaurants were maybe, oh gosh, three or four tables would be filled, whereas normally the room would be packed. So we weren't aware that even the waiters and the waitresses are getting paid by BP. And most, I don't know if people know that. It's not, everyone's focusing on like the shrimpers and all. But there are a lot of people. So I had two questions. How much in the end, when you're paying the waiters, waitresses, hotel staff, the hotels were empty because of, you know, the news, but the beaches were clean. What do you think the cost truly, when you're thinking of you're paying the waiters and the waitresses, you're paying all hotel workers, everyone that's, you know, there's no, the tourism was dead, especially Pensacola. It was unbelievable. And then when we talk to the local people, that's my first question. What do you really think the true cost of this will be? Second question, when we spoke to the local people who actually live there, they said their number one concern, the beaches had been cleaned up by BP. However, the dispersants that all were placed in the water, the planes flying overhead constantly, that was their true number one concern. Can you explain or talk about the dispersants a little more and maybe like long term, what is the concern of that?
Why, certainly. To answer your first question, BP has given some money, and recently they just gave several million dollars for advertising for the Pensacola and state of Florida. And the state of Florida has put in $25 million to increase advertising. But, you know, increasing the advertising money doesn't necessarily replace the loss that people, as you pointed out, are getting because of the tourists not being there. How those people that are being affected by it tangentially, like the waiters and waitresses, I don't think those people are ever going to get paid back adequately by BP for what they lost.
No. And the losses will be in the billions.
Oh, no question, George. Now, in answer to Sydney's second question, the amount of dispersants, 2 million plus gallons of dispersant that BP admitted to putting into the Gulf of Mexico, they do not know the long-term effects. And even the president of the company that makes Corexit said, you know, this is an unprecedented use of our product, and we're not sure how it's going to affect everything. Now, last week and over the last few weeks, we've talked about the underwater oil plumes. And there are a number of scientific ships that are trying to track it. They did some surveys in June and found that the plumes had been moving towards Texas underwater and then were shifting with the currents and then moving towards Florida. They don't know where this underwater oil is, but all my sources down at the scene admit that the scientists, the people on the ships, everybody, it didn't just vanish, you know, and it wasn't just absorbed into the Gulf and, you know, taken away. That oil is somewhere, but they don't know where. And so those, I think, are very legitimate concerns. The dispersant, it's going to be a long-term thing. I have a lot of friends who worked on the Exxon Valdez cleanup, and it was years later that people were still being affected by the use of dispersant on there. And you know, companies denied it, but everybody felt like they were dumping it right on me, or I was involved with it, and it has affected me.
Yeah, and see, and that's what concerns me about the seafood there. It's not the oil. It's these dispersants that you know, I don't want to eat.
Well, it's so funny, George, and you're right about that. The FDA came out and said recently, well, the fish can't get the dispersant, so no worries. And then in the same press release, the FDA spokesman said, well, but you know, we're not quite sure, and we need to do additional tests. It's like, what?
Yeah, exactly. Text in for you from Janet in San Francisco wants to know if you think this will change the way oil is drilled in the future.
No question about it. My latest article, people can see at professionalmariner.com, it's going to end. Business as usual is not going to be that way anymore. And it's going to start with not having, in my opinion, should be with foreign flag rigs. It should start with a change in the liability cap of $75 million for economic damages. That should be boosted. It should stop in not having what's called an acoustic preventer, which is required in the North Sea and required down in Brazil after they had a big disaster, that enables the crew of an oil rig to get off the vessel and trigger the shutdown from the lifeboat. You don't have to actually be on the rig. For $500,000, BP could have put one of those on board their vessel, but they said it was too expensive and our government didn't require them to do it beforehand. Mm-hmm. So, yes, there's going to be a lot of changes, and there really should be. There needs to be.
Let's go to Terry in Corpus Christi, Texas. Hey, Terry, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, George.
Oh, hey, Terry.
Uh-huh. Yes. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Terry.
Oh, okay. I heard on the break a while ago that on the news that, I don't know, I think it was in Georgia or some scientists or something said that there's still 80% of the oil in the bottom of the ocean. They just said it on the radio.
80%. Kelly, those aren't numbers they're letting us know.
Underneath, still in the bottom.
What do you think of that, Kelly?
Well, the official word, George, is that, and that came out, was that 75% had either been cleaned up, dispersed, or burned, and that only 25% remained. But among mariners and in maritime circles, everybody was like, no, that can't be right. But that was the official word from the government. And you know, a lot of people are thinking in the maritime industry, a lot of my shipmates, former shipmates and colleagues, and we're feeling like, well, they're just trying to downplay this, you know, and move beyond it. And look, everybody wants to move beyond this situation that has been occurring the last 4 months. But, you know, I'm also the kind of person that really wants to have facts. And to me, it just doesn't make any sense that only 25% remains and that, you know, out of all this that was spilled, and that, you know, they claimed that a ridiculously low amount, around 3%, was actually recovered. I have some good friends who were on those cleanup vessels, and they were doing much better than that. So, I mean, I don't know for where they're getting their facts from, but 80% remaining, I'm not sure about that either, but I don't think that's the case. But I do believe that number one, didn't have a real good idea all the way along of how much actually was spilled. They've said 176 million, maybe. But there was a long time they didn't even know what was getting into the Gulf, and how much has been recovered and how much remains. I don't think they really have a solid idea. That's my opinion.
Let's go to Palm Springs, California. It's Tom's turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, George, and hi, Captain. Thank you for the call. I've got a question. I tried to pull it up on the internet. I had a whole article on this, and of course, I can't find it right now, but it involved a refinery that BP has in Texas. About a week ago, there was just a little blurb that it was called something like a super cracker. You probably know what I'm referring to.
Yes, that was they received, I think it was a $56 million fine, if I recall. I could be wrong on that number, but they received a huge fine for unsafe practices of that refinery in Texas.
Well,
I've been on a ship several times and pumped cargo at.
Is that the one that it went berserk for like 40 days and put hundreds of thousands of tons of pollutants into the air, including methane and
CO? Yes, they had a series of explosions there. People died, And when the government investigators came, they found that there were a number of shortcuts that BP was taking that were not conducive to safety, and cost people their lives.
Yeah, I sort of sense a very bad pattern here by BP that they're living up to.
Well, there's a lot of people in maritime circles who felt that way, that there are some companies that are sticklers for safety, and there have been many of my colleagues who worked for BP and said that they didn't have that same kind of feeling. But I know one thing, that they're going to have to change the way they do business now.
Shirley's in Memphis, Tennessee. Go ahead, Shirley. You're on with Captain Sweeney. Shirley?
Go ahead. Shirley.
Shirley?
Shirley, that's you. Shirley?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hello,
Shirley.
George?
Turn your radio down, hon, because you're getting
okay.
The feedback.
Can you hear me?
It's going to throw you off. Yeah, go ahead.
Me? George, I would like to know why in the, well, whatever, the government has any reason to exert themselves into the BP issue when they haven't done anything right so far.
Well, Kelly, I guess they feel like they have to do something. I guess they've lost faith in BP from stepping in to do it the right way. Look how long it took them. That would be my take. Yours?
Well, the government has a responsibility for, in my opinion, for the protection and the general welfare of the public, and that includes the safety. There are safety regulations that the Coast Guard enforces, and they apply to commercial vessels on the seas, including oil rigs. But unfortunately, in this case, the government oversight for a lot of the safety issues that went on and caused this Deepwater Horizon disaster were administered by a foreign flag administration in the Marshall Islands. So unlike an American vessel, the Coast Guard wasn't able to get down there like they would normally and take care of a lot of these safety issues. They had to rely on another administration, which is basically just a haven for tax purposes.
I think so, too. Kelly, what do you do next? What's up for you? What's on your agenda these days?
Well, George, right now I'm in the process of renewing my license, which we have to do every 5 years.
Oh, you do? Okay.
We have to do that. I had to take some continuing education classes, so I've done that, and I'm in the process of renewing my license, which takes several months. And then after that, right now I'm catching up on my latest articles at Professional Mariner, which people can read at professionalmariner.com. And I've been thinking about another book. A lot of people have been hounding me about doing another book, so I'm thinking about doing a second book. I wrote that first one, From the Bridge, because I really felt that the maritime impacts so many people, and it really gives a firsthand view of what's going on out there. And so I'm thinking about doing another one. So I got a lot on my plate, and then my wife and I just had our 25th anniversary, and so...
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you, and so I'm doing a lot of stuff at home, keeping up on that, too.
I'm going to Detroit Saturday for my parents' 61st wedding anniversary.
Wow. Well, George, I want to tell you, you know, it's been, and I know that we're not quite done with this yet, and I'll, of course, keep you and Tom informed, but you're on top of it, and you've got great listeners, and the Coast listeners are right on top of it, too, and I really enjoyed being on tonight.
They're the best. Kelly, thank you so much, and I'll be back in just a moment with L.A. Marzulli as we talk about things to come.